Welcome to this second session of Vascular Stories, the medical podcast on vascular disease. We're here with Dr. Andrea Lupascu, surgeon, angiologist, specialist in internal medicine at the Agostino Gemelli University Polyclinic Foundation, Rome. In this section of the podcast, we'll explore real data on the appropriateness of phlebology in gender medicine, in chronic venous disease and deep vein thrombosis. Good morning, Dr. Lupascu.
Good morning.
Are there any disparities in the access to treatment options?
Yes, there are. Venous thromboembolism incidence and outcomes vary according to race and ethnicity. Lower individual and neighborhood socioeconomic status have been linked to greater venous thromboembolism risk, even in regions with a universal healthcare model, such as Denmark, Netherlands, and Sweden. Although men in the general population have a higher risk of venous thromboembolism recurrence than women, this risk differs by race, with Black and Latina women having a higher recurrence risk of venous thromboembolism than white women in the United States. In the United States, Black individuals with venous thromboembolism were fivefold more likely to experience complication of care after hospitalization for venous thromboembolism, including readmission, bleeding, and death than white individuals. Reducing disparities in venous thromboembolism incidence and outcomes will require individual, system-based, and societal commitments to equity.
In the case of venous thrombosis, which are the gender-specific risk factors?
Female-specific endocrine disorders like polycystic ovarian syndrome, characterized by hyperandrogenism, appear to increase the risk of thromboembolic events. Endogenous estradiol and sex hormone binding globulin levels, even in the absence of oral contraceptives, are linked to a higher thrombotic risk, indicating that female hormonal patterns alone may influence thrombosis. No evidence was found for an increase in the thrombotic risk in women with primary ovarian insufficiency based on FSH levels. We can conclude that endogenous sex hormones, particularly estradiol, sex hormone binding globulin levels, and androgen excess are important non-exogenous factors influencing the thrombotic risk in young women. These markers may have clinical utility in future individualized thrombotic risk stratification, especially in women with like polycystic ovarian syndrome or those considering hormonal therapies.
Is there any difference between men and women in the risk of venous thromboembolism?
Men have a consistent higher risk of recurrent thrombosis compared to women. This difference persists even after adjusting for age, comorbidities, thrombosis type, and anticoagulant use. The lower recurrence in women is not fully explained by hormone-related thrombosis. Potential explanations include biological differences, higher prevalence of persistent risk factor in men, like obesity, elevated D-dimer, or thrombin levels, and possible difference in treatment adherence. We can conclude that sex is an independent predictor of venous thrombosis recurrence. Men may require longer anticoagulation therapy after a first thrombotic event, especially if unprovoked. Further research is needed to identify sex-specific risk factor and improve personalized treatment strategies.
What do you think about the thrombotic and hemorrhagic burden in women?
There are gender differences, particularly in women, affect the risk of thrombosis and bleeding, and how women respond to antithrombotic therapies. The thrombotic risk in women can vary. Women experience fluctuating prothrombotic activity due to menstrual cycles, oral contraceptives, pregnancy, menopause, hormone replacement therapy, and platyflexion may be more reactive in women, especially premenopausal, due to estrogen effect. Coagulation factors vary with hormonal status, increasing thrombotic risk during pregnancy and postpartum. Also, the bleeding risk in women can vary. Women have a higher risk of bleeding during acute coronary syndromes, percutaneous coronary intervention, and this may be due to lower body weight and inappropriate dosing of antithrombotic drugs. We can conclude that women have a unique thrombotic and bleeding profiles influenced by hormonal and physiological factors. Antithrombotic therapy should be personalized considering gender-specific risk and benefits.
And Dr. Lupescu, what do you think are the future perspectives in phlebology in gender medicine?
Research in gender medicine applied to phlebology is still evolving. We need to work on these points. First, personalized risk stratification. Sex-specific risk model should be developed to better predict thrombotic and hemorrhagic events in both women and men. Current tools, including gender as a factor, but more nuanced model could improve accuracy, especially in younger women or those with hormonal influences. Two, hormonal influence and vascular biology. More research is needed to understand how estrogens, progesterone, and androgens affect blood function, coagulation pathways, and endothelial health. This could lead to hormone-sensitive therapeutic strategies, especially for women in reproductive or postmenopausal stages. Three, sex-based pharmacodynamics and pharmacokinetics. Women may metabolize antithrombotic drugs differently due to body composition, hormonal status, and liver enzyme activity. Future drug trials should include sex disaggregated data and explore dose optimization for women to reduce bleeding risk without compromising efficacy. Four, improved representation in clinical trials. Women, especially pregnant women, are underrepresented in trials involving antithrombotic therapies. Future studies must include diverse female populations to ensure safety and efficacy across life stages. 5. Digital health and AI integration. AI-driven tools could help monitor symptoms, predict complications, and adjust treatments based on sex-specific patterns in chronic venous disease and thrombotic venous disease. Wearable and mobile apps could track menstrual cycles, pregnancy status, or hormone therapy. Integrating this data into personalized care plans. 6. Education and awareness. Both patients and healthcare providers need better education on how gender affects vascular health. 7. Pregnancy-specific guidelines. There is a critical need for clear, evidence-based guidelines on the use of antithrombotic therapies during pregnancies and postpartum. My final thought is that gender medicine in phlebology is still in its early but essential phase. The integration of biological sex, hormonal status, and gender-specific risk factor into clinical practice will not only improve outcomes for women, but also enhance the precision of vascular medicine as a whole.
Thank you, Dr. Lupescu, for dedicating your time and expertise to this podcast. We hope that our discussion provided important insights and reflections. You listened to Vascular Stories, the medical podcast on vascular disease. You can download the script and the audio file at www.vascular.alphasigma.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, continue following us. This podcast has been produced with the support of Alpha Sigma. You can find the reference studies related to this podcast in the PDF.